I was going to ask if all the council members could stand up and maybe just go around and introduce themselves so that the sector managers know who you are. I guess we can just start. Yeah, I'll get the mic. I don't know where it is. Have we skipped anyone? Ah, no? Okay, that's everyone I see. Great, thanks guys. So it's time for our second public comment session, in which we were hoping to get comments from fishermen related to their experiences in sectors and their comments about sector management. Anyone like to speak? Going once. All right, Alan. Jackie? Oops, sorry. Whack the mic. Are you standing, Jackie? No. Oh, okay. I don't know what happened to the mics again. Microphones. Thanks, Jackie. Move on to Ellen. Okay. Go right.
Build your problem.
Thank you. Right. Ellen, now. Thanks. Anyone else wants to speak? No? All right, Jackie again. Second shot. Thanks, Jackie. We have time for one more comment. Okay, we can move right into the panels then. Our next panel is on data management, so if I can ask the panelists to come up to the table. That's everybody. Okay, probably should have done this yesterday, but actually I want to go down and if everyone can just introduce yourself and say your sector affiliation.
My name is Cindy Smith. I'm the Tri-State Sector Manager, and last year I also managed the Port Clyde sector.
Dan Salerno, Sector Manager for Northeast Fisheries Sector Number 5. I was the manager last year for Northeast Fisheries Sector 2.
Barry Clifford with the National Marine Fisheries, the Fisheries Data Services Section, which is formerly the Fisheries Statistics Office.
I'm Jim Reardon. I'm Sector Manager for Northeast Fisheries Sector 6 in Boston and Northeast Fisheries Sector 10 of the South Shore of Boston.
Karen Ryder. I work for the Fixed Gear Sector and the Port Clyde Sector as the analyst.
Tony Conigliari, National Marine Fisheries Service, Fisheries Data Services Division.
Stephanie Raphael, Northeast Fisheries Sector 9, out of New Bedford.
Thanks. So the purpose of this panel is to talk about the way data is used in sector management, the whole stream of data, the collection of data, what's done with by the agency. And I know there's a lot of people with a lot of opinions about this. So does anyone want to go first? Does anyone have anything prepared? All right.
There's a lot of data involved with this, a lot of critical data needs. It's a very fun process. The problem with the process, though, as soon as a vessel leaves the dock, you're already starting the process with a broken link. You don't have a VTR number when the vessel leaves the dock. That is the most critical piece of information. It takes someone to go back after the fact and try to marry up a VTR number to a declaration. The VTR serial number is the most important piece of information in sector management. We need to know it. Dealers need to know it. At-sea monitors, observers need to know it. The Fisheries Service needs to know it. And without that number, it's a nightmare. The majority of errors that we see usually are in the dealer database. I don't understand why, other than they're dealing with a lot of the information. Another problem with the VTR serial number is that it's being manually entered by numerous people. Let's face it, it's an 8-digit number. Numbers get transposed, numbers get left off, numbers get added on. It's a very difficult number to deal with. If in the process the VTR number is correct across the board, every person involved with this, finest kind. You know, rock on, let's move on, data's all accounted for. If there is an error with that VTR serial number, it's a very long and time-consuming process to get this fixed. And the problem with it is until it is fixed, any automated systems, whether you're talking about Northeast Fishery Sectors has a fish tracks management tool. I believe the Cape Cod Hook people have their own management tool. Cindy Smith with Tri-State has their own management tool. And even the Fishery Service has their own management tool. The problem is if there's an error, no one has the right numbers. Okay, didn't seem to be a big problem last year because we left so many fish on the table. Well, that's not going to be the case in the future. We need to get these errors corrected sooner. We need to prevent these errors. Because at the end of the day, if you don't have a correct accounting of where your sector and your members are at, as a manager, we can't do anything for you. I've kind of taken the approach that I do my report by hand every week. It's kind of a long, tedious process that I kind of enjoy. I don't like to admit that publicly, but some of the errors that we see coming in, and keep in mind, the data that we're using is data that's fed to us from the agency. Basically, we're taking it, repackaging it, and giving it back to them. That's another issue I don't completely understand. But some of the data that's coming in, I mean, basic questions is, why don't you have some basic checks that don't allow for these errors to go into the system to begin with? There are times when NIMS has the correct information and cannot or will not fix it. We've kind of been discussing some of these reasons why you can't. The big example that we ran into last year was imputed trips. If anyone doesn't know what an imputed trip is, sit down with the sector manager because apparently we all have them. Basically, I've sat with my data handler, Rob Banks, who, might I add, is doing a great job. He's very proactive in his approach with working with me and the other managers that he deals with. But he's shown me what the agency has. You have the VMS track line. You know where this vessel is fishing. You know what this vessel is doing. But because you don't have that piece of paper coming in, there's nothing anyone can do about it. And I understand the critical nature of getting that VTR in, but when we're dealing with year-end reconciliation at the end of the year, we need to think a little broader scope than we still need that piece of paper. I completely get we need to get that information in, but we need a little more flexibility at this year-end reconciliation because that leads to whose numbers are right. You know, time and time again, We've been told at various venues, meetings, what have you, that the sector manager has the best data set because we're getting it real time. But at the end of the day, you know, at the end of the reconciliation process, NIMS data trumped all. You know, whether we lost fish, gained fish, what have you, at the end of the day, it didn't matter what we said we had as a sector manager. You know, it was the agency's numbers that were final. And to the reconciliation and the whole error reporting process, wow, what a train wreck last year. It's getting better. Obviously, we're starting day one. We started year two, day one, starting with this process. That's a very cumbersome process, but it's a very useful process. Some of the problems that I've been asking is we still have yet to get any guidance document, data dictionary, whatever, an explanation of what these reports that we are getting from NIMS. We've had to figure some of it out on our own. We've been given information from the agency. Well, this is what this report is telling you. But we've also ran into the fact that depending on who you speak to, we're not getting the same answer. So it would be very nice to have a guidance document after a year and a half of receiving these reports. What are these reports? How many of these reports are there? Are there reports that we don't see? If we don't fix these reports, how does the agency account for these fish? You know, honestly, what I've kind of figured out is that some of the reports, I'm not chasing it down because, you know what, the data's there. You're apparently accounting for it some way. I'm not going to chase down 4 pounds of fish. Plain and simple. EVTR, I really don't want to discuss that. Maybe some of the other members here would like to talk to EVTR. I have my own opinions, but I'll allow some of the other members here to speak.
Does anyone else want to talk about other issues you've had with data management? Cindy.
Sure, I'll take a shot at it. First, I would reiterate everything Dan just said. Secondly, I just want to point out to the folks who don't already know it that industry, several organizations in industry have spent a lot of money to develop the electronic tools to produce the reports that NIMS requires. And it was extremely frustrating last year that we didn't get any feedback from NIMS on our data on the reports we were sending in for like the first 6 months of the year. You know, people were doing it by hand. People were developing software products, and we didn't even know if what we were sending in was correct and what you guys needed or not. So that was really frustrating, just to make that point. On the positive side, reconciliation has started, you know, it just kept going from the end of last year, so that's very positive. I'm in constant contact with the person I'm doing data with on a weekly basis, so we're able to clear up any issues pretty efficiently. Most of the time. The fact that so many managers were running their reports, creating their reports by hand, created tremendous opportunity for data errors. And for those of you who don't live in a data-rich world, if you know, one mistake can screw up the whole system. And if it's garbage data going into a system because somebody transposed a number somewhere, it's garbage data coming out, and it's really hard to go back and find those mistakes. So that's just kind of an overarching theme when you're in the data management field. Garbage in, garbage out, and so it's really hard to know what's going on. Same point Dan made, final reconciliation last year with NIMS took way too long. NIMS wasn't able to produce the final catch and landings till the end of June, and then people wanted to know what their carryover was. That took another few weeks. I had guys fishing without knowing what their allocation was at the beginning of the year, and that's a problem, you know, especially for people with small allocations. Fishermen want to know, particularly those with small allocations, they want to know exactly how many pounds they have left in their allocation and how close is the sector to running out of, pick your species, gray sole or yellowtail. And so the challenges that the manager's having with NIMS trying to reconcile that, even though we all have to have a reserve, and we build that reserve in. But, you know, the data is really important to these fishermen, and the managers are working really hard to try and make this work for them. And it's a really hard thing to do. Okay, my last point, it was very difficult to have the 20% holdback for so long this year. Again, I had fishermen fishing at the beginning of the year without knowing what their allocation was, but then with knowing that 20% of it was being withheld until NIMS got the final numbers done. Now, there's definitely ways around that that the sector managers can work out amongst themselves, but it's still a lot of fish to hold back if your guys are primarily fishing in May and June and July. I think that's about all that I had at the moment. Thanks.
Thanks, Cindy. I'm going to jump down to Stephanie if you want to add anything, since I couldn't see you yesterday.
Sure. I just want to reiterate what everyone's been saying, the reconciliation process. I think it was started way too late. I know Cindy said that it was about 6 months until we got any feedback, and that's true. I don't think it was until about December we started going up for meetings and we were addressing issues that we were having with the data. Towards the end of the year, actually, we had an issue with our Eastern cod, and I just think there needs to be more maybe quality control with the year-end reconciliation as far as last year, when I know we started off. Originally, we started going for meetings. We were told we were 108% at our Eastern cod, and I kept checking my numbers, and I said, there has to be something wrong. There has to be something wrong. So this is already after the end of the year, and they revisited it, and actually we ended up 10,000 pounds in the good that ended up transferring over to Western cod. So there has to be – there's something was wrong, and I'm not sure what was going on. I understand there's bumps in the road, especially with a new sector system. And actually, the individual I'm working with, my handler this year, she's great, and I don't think we'll run into the issues that I ran into last year. We're very proactive, and I know Mark said they are taking a more proactive approach to this year's data reconciliation, and they have already started, and I believe that's true. I mean, we're dealing with JIRA issues. I'm not sure if everyone's familiar with JIRA issues. It's just a program the agency is set up. So if they're having an issue, they enter an issue, we get an email copy of what it is, and we can look into it and work with our handler and straightening out the issue. So we've actually dealt with those, whereas last year we didn't get them till way after the half of the year was over. And also, I think if you're asking for help, let us help you. I understand sometimes the VTR copy that we have doesn't say NIMS copy at the bottom, but if you're lacking information, we have it. I mean, I think that it'll help with data on both sides to be more willing to accept our help. I mean, to sit there and say you need our help but then not accept our copy because it doesn't have a NIMS copy in red print down the bottom it's a carbon copy of what the fishermen were writing. It's the same information you would be getting. So instead of waiting until the end of the year when you're desperate for information and then finally willing to take it like happened at the end of the year last year, I think just allow us to help you because, I mean, we're working for the accuracy of the same numbers. So, NIMS is, they are taking a much more proactive approach. We ran into a lot of issues last year, but it seems like they are working towards a better year-end reconciliation. I am hopeful that it'll run a lot more smoothly than it did last year.
Stephanie, what about Jim or Karen? Do you have anything to add?
First, I want to say that everyone that's spoken, I would agree with what they've said so far. I wanted to just elaborate, I guess, on some of these points. The reconciliation at the end of last fishing year was really a terrible process, and I agree that it started too late and it took too long starting the whole reconciliation, getting information from NIMS in December as to our imputed trips and the data that the fish that they thought we had caught was way too late. And a lot of these things really took us by surprise. And some of these things that were brought up in December were still not resolved by the end of the fishing year. And in some cases, we would resolve some things and other things would come up later on. And this happened during the whole reconciliation process, even right until the end, even into the June time period. We'd have a certain amount of imputed trips or a certain amount of landings differences where they had a certain number for our sector overall that we had supposedly landed, and we had, of course, a lower number. And these would come up, you know, a week before the end of the process, before the process was actually cut off and things were finalized. We found that really difficult to deal with. It was also difficult because the issue tracking system that Stephanie mentioned, the JIRA process, has been really helpful, and that was implemented probably around the same time frame. I don't remember exactly, December of last year, so that we could actually put in issues that we had with, say, dealer data or observer data or other things, and hopefully get these things resolved. While the JIRA system has been really helpful, we have found that issues are taking a long time to be resolved, and some of these are simple issues. Dealer data with either duplicates or a wrong VTR number, back to Dan's point about VTR numbers being the key to everything. I think he brought up, just to sidestep for a second, he brought up a good point that somewhere in the system, if it's not a valid VTR number, then the person that's entering it should not be allowed to enter it. I think that would help a great deal. But we would have small dealer changes that needed to be made, small corrections, and sometimes they take months. So the JIRA system is a good thing, but it seems that there's no accountability for the people that are actually using it and should be making these corrections. It takes a long time. In one case, at the end of last fishing year, we had a discrepancy between NIMS data and our data to the tune of something like 5,000 pounds for one fisherman. And that particular instance, the dealer data was duplicated, and that never got corrected. So this particular fisherman had to take the hit for an extra 5,000 pounds of fish that he never caught. And it was even admitted, it was clear that he did not catch this fish. So I would like to say as far as that while NIMS is looking at a sector's overall allocation, these are individuals that are, the fishermen are individuals, and their individual allocation is important to them. And it's important to remember that so that this type of thing doesn't happen, because when NIMS's numbers are higher for any caught fish for a sector, well, that trickles down to one particular person that has to take it, you know, has to eat that. And if he's at over 90% and the carryover is 10%, well, he loses that carryover. So you're directly impacting a person's livelihood and their business. Dealer data is, from what I have seen, the most error-prone data. There doesn't seem to be any incentive for dealers to report on time and make sure they report correctly. We have a dealer in one of our sectors that hasn't reported. I think it was a trip back in August. He still has not reported. And there seems to be no punitive measures taken. I mean, there should be something so that they are forced to report, because we have to rely on that. It'll probably happen, and if it happens right at the end of the year, then that doesn't make any sense, and it shouldn't be that way. Another point I had that I don't think anyone has brought up yet is that documentation on data requirements for weekly reports and other data requirements, we've seen since the beginning that it's not very specific. The management tools that Dan was referring to, we each have a database there are several databases out there that crunch the numbers. I have one that does it for the Port Clyde sector and the fixed gear sector. And it works well, but it only works as well as the requirements that we receive from NIMS. So there are some gray areas. In fact, I know we're reporting differently than we're reporting in such a way that their system, when they're trying to calculate differences, it has a lot of trouble. But that's because we weren't given clear requirements on how we needed to present these reports. So it would be really helpful to have some clear documentation. I've been hearing for months that we are going to get some more clear documentation. I have yet to see that. In addition, when there are data requirements changes, there was a change recently as far as the format of our weekly reports. we were given exactly 10 days notice to implement these changes. That is really way too short a time frame. We have to have a programmer make these changes, or we have to go in and manually make these changes to a report that we have to submit every week. One of my reports is about 6,000 lines of data. The other one is probably 20,000. I'm not going to go in and make manual changes to that many lines of data. So we really should have a lot more lead time than 10 days notice when we have to make programming changes. Let's see. I don't think that it's really, well, we're expected to be held to a certain standard, and yet we're not given the means to do so. The whole thing about VTR compliance that happened earlier in the year, we were given a list with no details about VTRs that were out of compliance. It means they, I guess, hadn't been sent in. Well, it turned out after getting some more information, that in fact some of these VTRs had been sent in by the vessel captains, but they were missing information. What is supposed to happen is that they're supposed to be sent back to the vessel captain, then corrected, and then resent it to NIMS. It was discovered at some point in the process that some of these had not even ever been sent back to the captains. They were still sitting in a NIMS office. So the VTR compliance piece of this, that's what was being used to determine whether a sector could trade or lease ACE or not. And that has since been lifted. However, it seems to me that that should not have happened. Also, all the data fields are not created equal. If a VTR is sent back because it's missing a gear type or the chart area, okay, those are important pieces of information. But if it's sent back because it's missing the number of crew, well, ACE trading shouldn't be held up because of that. So I think this is something we really need to address clearly, is the VTR compliance. In the reconciliation process at the end of last year, we received information on, we received some overall numbers as to what NIMS believed was our ACE usage for the year. And, of course, we had our own numbers, and they did not match. In one case, the numbers were something like 900% off on one of the stocks. And when I asked for information as to, well, where are you getting these numbers, I didn't get anything. I didn't get any justification for it. And I've since found out that these numbers are mostly imputed trips that come through NIMS's quota monitoring system. But it's kind of a black box. And if we're doing data reconciliation, if you don't give us the tools to work with, we can't reconcile them. And we have done a little bit of work digging into that. A couple weeks ago I did with Ted Racine and with Tony here. And we've come a little way, but we really need to work on that so that we don't have a situation this year where our sectors are presenting numbers and the NIMS numbers are different, and of course our numbers are not taken as the final ones. There should be no discrepancies whatsoever in between those two. I mean, when it's close, it's still not close enough for any individual fisherman because it impacts him, as I said before. What else? I think that was all that I had to add to what you guys have already said. Thanks,
Karen. I'm going to give Jim a chance if you have anything to add, and then maybe move to Barry and Tony talk about some of this.
Thank you. Good morning. first of all, give the fishermen credit. This was a logistical nightmare that was launched because you know, some guys don't have fax machines, some guys don't have even email, don't even use email. Those things are considerations that we had to work on as far as the process goes. So there was this required a significant amount of cooperation, and I want to give the fishermen credit for being so willing to cooperate with this, because it's there's a lot of demands on them and a lot of hang-ups and saying, you know, what do we got to do this for? What do we have to do this for? That whole process, they didn't even understand what we were doing. We get better at Excel real quick. The Excel applications I had made in the past were for business operations that we utilize certain programs, but this was an adaptive program.
Sorry, Jim.
Yes.
Can you pull your mic?
Okay, sorry. But this was an adaptive program, and we basically, I was doing all my reports by hand, and I'm glad I did that now because I understood the whole process. But and now we have a system that works a lot better. We had problems with the fish tracks module last year, but it's working. The smack tracks program, the adaptation is working very well now, so the system of tracking is much more efficient. Last year we spent hours and hours and hours. I know that Cape Hawk had a different program that I looked at just to get an idea of what they were doing, and Josh Wershmer, he created his own program, and we all cooperated. In other words, the feedback was a continuous process of cooperation, and we got through the reconciliation process. Was a long process, but this year we're chasing 5 pounds of hake, or the fact that nobody has devs on the VTR, which is a huge time waster, and I find that there's a lot of time that we have to spend on these reports and this data stream that we could be doing more, giving more strength to the requirements of the sectors. We don't spend much time on the docks. I'd love to spend more time on the docks, but the time and the process and the logistics of the whole process. And these guys laugh at me when I talk about discards and discard rates, because the logic when I got to that portion of the program to understand what they were doing to these guys that didn't even see a redfish his whole life, and all of a sudden he has to go lease redfish because of the sector manager detail report process with discard rates and the KOL considerations. The logistics really bothered me more than anything. I said to Dan Morris one day, I just can't do this, Dan. He said, you mean you can't do it? I said, no. I can't do it. I can't comprehend that they're doing this, because it doesn't make sense relative to the master plan of ecosystem-based management. And to me, chasing these little June bugs is not really a healthy process. What's really going on? I need to spend more time finding Gulf of Maine winter flounder right now for my fishermen than tracing 5 pounds of hake that weren't on a deal of VTR. That's the kind of thing that we're dealing with here. Data streams. I want to thank Stephanie Dukes, Barry, Tony, Richard Van Hoosen, Mark Brady, Mark Grant. Who's the other? Oh, I'm forgetting somebody. But very, very John Witzig, very cooperative as far as questions and being able to work through this. They were great, and we established a good working relationship, but I think it's working today, because I think we some of the things, the perspectives that we see, they don't see, because they're looking at it from a completely different angle, and they don't understand some of the logistics that we have to deal with in order to just, and the time that it takes in order to fix those things. I'm not going to talk too long, but I was thankful. Data streams. One of the things I've been talking with Barry about now is the fact that last year we had dockside monitoring, and the only value that I saw in the whole dockside monitoring program was the fact that Atlantic Catch Data Limited was very efficient in supplying reports. And I had a VTR report every. If I asked for it on that day, I would get it, and I would track the VTRs that way. Because now they don't have to have a trip start hail. So that doesn't pop up on the screen. So we have to wait for the trip end hail. But it's much, much easier to track things if we can find a way to supplant that data lack with something there. I think we will. I guess that's it. I guess that's it for now. Entering VTRs by hand is a pain in the neck. I tell you that. There's some way we got to fix this. It just takes up too much time, and there's too much room for error. The EVTR program that they're talking about now is not really working. There's so many programs that are out there. We saw it last week at the sector workshop that GMRI ran. Adam, the two steel boys. One of them was from Scotland, and one of them was from Maine. And they had data streams that was instantaneous relative to. They were calculating fuel consumption, and we can't even somehow track a VTR. This, you know, we got to step this up a little bit. Let's get this. Let's put this time. Let's use these technologies that we can. There's too much. You know, this is too much waste of time. You know, let's talk about ecosystem-based management and trying to strengthen these fisheries, strengthen the fishermen's base.
Thanks. Barry or Tony, do you want to chime in on concerns, problems you've had?
Yes. You know, I think it's important to first acknowledge that the essence of what you're hearing so far this morning is accurate. You know, we were late in delivering some systems and programs assisting in the reconciliation process last year, and it put everybody behind the eight ball, and it was difficult, and it made year end extremely stressful and burdensome on everybody. But having said that, you know, over the last 14 months or so, many programs and systems have been developed and implemented to help expedite that whole process to a point where I think today it's working fairly well. By no means am I saying it's perfect. So I'm hopeful, and I anticipate this year the process going much, much smoother, and the year-end process being quite a bit quicker. You know, all these folks touched on a few topics, and I'm not sure where to begin. Part of the problem is with the data management is we're utilizing data streams that are disjointed and aren't integrated, and we're trying to stuff them into this capsule of near real-time monitoring. And it inherently, with those older data collection systems, you know, we're asking a lot of those methodologies. So, that's just my thoughts on the data streams and the use that we're trying to use them for. For anyone that doesn't know what an imputed trip is, because you heard that term a few times this morning, essentially, my rudimentary understanding and explanation is when there's a VMS declaration made, we then are able to identify the existence of a trip. Lacking any other data to support that trip, i.e. a dealer report, a VTR, a catch report, et cetera, we have our analysts have an algorithm that will generate the catch, will predict the catch for that trip. And that predicted catch will remain present in the database and consequently in the used ACE summary until such time that until a single data stream does show up, i.e. a dealer report or a VTR. So the fact that we have these imputed trips, yes, they're imputed trips, but they are imputed for a reason. It's because we're lacking other required data streams giving us the catch information associated with that trip. Part of the reconciliation process is the managers are, on some time frame, Tony, weekly or monthly, given basically an itemized list of these imputed trips to help them search out those VTRs or dealer reports in an effort to essentially eliminate the imputations. So that's just a little bit of a background on what these imputed trips are. I guess that was it for the time being. Tony?
I'm sorry, I think he asked me a question, Barry, but Karen was busy telling me some other things I screwed up too. The imputed trip listing does go out weekly to the sector managers, and our aim is to not have the year-end push that we had last year to clean up trips that had no corresponding data. So we are working that on a weekly basis. So hopefully there's not that issue this year. As for the comments that I did hear, I agree wholeheartedly that we do have a lot of things that we need to improve from last year. I think we already have started that process, including the weekly reconciliation meetings, improving dealer data quality that's coming into our group this year. We're transitioning that now, so that hopefully should show some improvement. We did some realignment on handlers, so that hopefully will help. And I think Barry touched on everything else.
Thanks. So I have a question for the panel members. I know that the council is interested in knowing if there's anything the council can do to improve the management of data in the sector fishery. And so a lot of these issues, although they're very, very important, are primarily with the agency. And I'm not sure if everyone's fully aware of what the agency does and what the council does, but the council is looking more at sort of the bigger picture, the basic structure of the data system. And so if anyone has anything that they might want to, any concerns they might want to air while the council members are here, that would be great.
One thing that was brought up yesterday, I heard the term thrown around quite a bit, was the ITQ, IFQ, whatever. You know, the system right now cannot handle an ITQ system. You cannot do reporting right now as the system stands. So any thoughts of an ITQ system is very premature from a data handling standpoint.
Thanks. Does anyone else have anything, or should we move to questions from the audience? Okay, Cindy.
I'm not sure that there's a policy direction for the council to take regarding data management. I can reiterate that there are at least four different computer systems, different software systems that different people have created, paid for, that are running these sector reports. So if you do dramatically change, God forbid, the management of this fishery, then that's a lot of money and effort and time gone down the drain. And those systems have been designed for what we're required to produce right now and what the fishermen need right now. So I don't know that there's a policy direction regarding data management. I think the sort of the take-home message is last year data was crazy, management was very hard between NIMS and the sector managers, everybody was scrambling. Number two, NIMS has made tremendous progress and worked really hard with the sector managers to put into systems in place to help us create what they need and to follow up with the managers to keep on top of it. I can't give them enough credit because they have worked really hard, and it's getting better all the time. And the third piece, and this is a message for the data handlers at NIMS, is that particularly for fishermen with smaller allocations, the numbers really, really matter because it's a financial decision on a day-to-day basis. Do I have enough fish to go fishing? Where am I going to get the money to lease more quota if that's what I need to do? It is a financial thing. It is a livelihood, and you guys are closer than ever to impacting that with these data streams. So it's really important for the small guys, especially, that the data's right. And it's hard to do, I know. But I don't know where the policy piece is. Thanks.
No problem. Maybe it's something just to keep in mind and think about as the council goes down the road of looking at the sector system. Questions from the audience? We're there. Paul gets his exercise now.
Hey, Dave. We'd have to look at the trip on a trip level to see if it's checking VTRAC, something like that, to see what's going on with the trip itself. So we'd have to do a declaration by declaration review to get that sort of information, if that's what you'd like to see.
Well, it just seems, you know, from my imputed trips, that most, quite often, they are trips where a vessel turned around, you just have to cross that demarcation line for whatever reason, and they're having computed data against that exploder.
Well, I know our analysts need that information to do real-time quota monitoring, and we have set up a policy with OLE to stitch those trips, to put them together, to get rid of the extra declaration that showed up in the AMS system. So we do that on a weekly basis now, to work with OLE to stitch those when required, and to work with the sector managers to clean up imputed trips. So at the end of the year, this year, like we had last year, we don't have that large set of imputed trips that we have to clean through, and in addition to reconciling the dealer and VTR data. So we want to have at almost zero number on a weekly basis for the imputed trips. And I do have my team working that. That's their one of the top priorities each week, is to work the imputed trips with each of the sector managers.
The other thing I wanted to comment on was putting constraints into the systems so that people can't enter wrong VTR numbers. Number of characters. I see in my detailed reports sometimes, my dealer reports with VTR numbers that don't even have enough numbers. How does the system allow somebody to put in seven numbers when it should be eight? And that is going to happen more often when we go to EVTR, the dealer is now putting in 14 numbers. I already see it in my EVTR trips. So the dealer has a typo of the EVTR trip. I mean, that's a 14 character number.
Sure. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, for the dealer data quality, that had always been handled by the port agents. We're transitioning that into the QA group, my group. And what we're doing is working with the industry data investigation team, that's what our group's called, is to work with the dealers to improve the VTR serial number, the permit number, the VTR serial number, the two most important pieces of information that we want to get from the dealer report. Right now it is a free form entry field in SAFIS. We would like to get a constraint put into that, have a numeric only, and for the with a valid range for the VTR serial number. So that is something we're looking at, in addition to just working on a daily basis with the dealers. And we are starting that this month, so hopefully we'll see an improvement in the dealer data. But that is something we're looking at, is putting a constraint for that VTR serial number.
Thanks. More questions?
Could I just expand upon that?
Sure, go ahead.
Because it also lends to something Dan mentioned earlier. In the VTR side of things, in the VTR data collection system, there are many, many constraints and audit checks in place. So I didn't want the perception to be out there that it was just a free form, take anything type of collection system. It's very difficult to program audit checks for every scenario and for every logic check, et cetera. So, substandard data is going to make its way in there, but there are many, many, many quality checks in the system now.
Thanks. Question back there.
Yeah, I have a follow-up question on the VTR issue, and I think pretty much everybody on the panel has spoken to the importance of the VTR number and some of the challenges that have occurred with VTRs over the past year in our sector. We've certainly experienced those ourselves. A couple people spoke to the fact that you have people transposing numbers and handwriting VTRs, and it seems to me that this is something that could be done electronically to make it a lot easier, and I've heard a variety of opinions up there on the panel on whether the EVTR system is good, bad, or indifferent. So I was hoping people on the panel could talk about whether they think it's ready to go, whether it's, and if it's not ready to go, what could be done to get it ready to go, because it seems like it could be an important solution to one of the biggest problems we're having with reporting data. Thanks.
From NIMS perspective, it's ready to go. There's a number of boats that are already utilizing it. At present, any boat with a groundfish permit and who is either a sector member, a participant in the cooperative research study fleet, or had been working with GMRI is eligible to utilize EVTR. There's only one EVTR software application that's approved for use, and that is what you all may know as what is known as Flounders. That was developed over the years in concert with a lot of different groups, but is basically now supported by the Science Center. We're anticipating other software applications to be submitted to us for approval at any time. We delivered the technical and business requirements associated with those software applications to industry months ago. So from our perspective, we are ready to go. We are already accepting EVTR. Now, having said that, we are still building infrastructure and support systems in-house to allow us to make that available to a larger audience. We have had hiccups since we approved EVTR on July 1, and Dave can attest to it. He's probably been the biggest victim. I hate to use that word. We recently overcame a significant hurdle, so the EVTR data is now coming in. It is being presented in the SIM data, which the sector managers use for their vessel trip report downloads. That's the status.
Thanks. Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
From a sector manager standpoint, Flounders was designed with something else in mind. It's being applied to the EVTR process. I have no problem with that. But from what I've seen, I do have a couple of vessels in my sector that are producing EVTR electronic reporting. Luckily, they are not groundfish trips, so I haven't had to deal with it yet. But from what I'm seeing in the output, it's actually creating more work for the sector manager. I think it's something that we're working on. Obviously, Dave Levier was kind of the test subject on this system. He's taken a lot of fun times with it. But it's great if it's doing something for someone, but if you're creating more work for us, I'm not for it. Honestly, I have to say, if you're giving me more work, I don't want it. And I would take the approach to say no member of my sector is allowed to use EVTR, and I have the authority to bring that to my board of directors. And if I can make a good case, plain and simple, I don't want it. But we are trying to be proactive. We are trying to work with the agency to make sure that the output is useful to all. I mean, that's what we're looking for, is an output that's useful to all data users, plain and simple.
Thanks. Let's go back to the audience. I think Talia had another one here.
I'm going to actually raise this to Karen because she highlighted it, and it's also in the letter that NSE had submitted to the council. It goes to what can the council do. It might just be an administrative clarification, but we really struggle with the reporting, what's considered a reporting requirement you can't be exempt from, and also what the council considered necessary for the agency to approve ACE transfers. We've gone back and forth a lot with this when it comes to the VTR compliance issues, because it's not that we don't think some of the data fields are important, but if you have a sector trying to conduct a trade and they have a member who had their VTR returned to them because they forgot to list the crew size, we do wonder how that requirement to be prohibited from trading is justified when it's just missing some of the fields. And so if you look at Amendment 16 language, maybe it's a little bit of clarification about what the council's intent was on the authorization for ACE trades, especially when it comes to VTR compliance. And Karen highlighted it, so maybe you want to talk more about that. Your experiences with the prohibition on trading, or Dan or Cindy, Stephanie?
I didn't really have anything to add on that. I just wanted to bring that up as a real source of problems. That's all. Maybe someone else has comments.
I would. Is it working? Yeah. I would just reiterate that, you know, I understand that that it was probably put into place to provide a very strong incentive for fishermen to do their VTRs properly and to get them in on time. But it isn't fair to the fishermen. If one guy is a habitual screw-up on his VTRs because, for whatever reason, he's dyslexic, the guy at the NIMS can't read his writing, he forgets to put in the crew size, but it impacts everybody in that sector if NIMS is saying, well, nobody can do a trade in that sector because this one guy has a hard time doing his VTRs. It's not fair, and it's really impacting the ability of these sectors to keep operating. Also creates a lot of bad feeling amongst the industry. So I think it's just a sort of a bad idea. I understand the tone with which it was implemented. I get the concept. You need VTRs to be better, but we need to find a different way to encourage that behavior. Thanks.
Stephanie, did you have something to add? I saw you.
No, actually, I think everyone's pretty much touched upon my opinion. I mean, I just feel that, like Cindy said, I mean, there could be, you know, one person who always forgets to put the time in. I've seen that, and I think I tend to have a little problem with the time one, because I know I've been there, and I've seen Bethany pull it up, and she can pull it up, and she sees where, I mean, I know we talked about you can see where they are, where they fished, at what time they were here, what time they're there. I mean, we know that you know what time they landed. If it's something, and I understand that if you do it for every single person, if it's a habit of one captain, I think you might get the message across better by sending it back. But for something, I mean, as small as that, they forget to put the time in, or actually I had one captain get it back because his time wasn't in the military time format, so they had sent it back, and I just said, oh, no, it just needs to be, you know, not 6, it needs to be 1,800. And so we've done that modification, sent it back that way. But I know that actually last week we ran into the issue that we had a correction. We made the correction, we sent it back, and I got a call saying somehow between my desk and the VTR office, I lost the VTR that you sent. Do you mind just faxing me over a copy? So, I mean, something like that. I mean, the process gets held up, and, I mean, it just makes it for hostile attitudes towards people. I mean, you know that if there's this one person who's holding back the whole trading for the sector, that they're going to not be treated very nicely. So I think there is a better way. I think there's a better way than restricting the whole sector's trading. I mean, some people are waiting for that fish to go out on their next trip. I think there's a better way to go about it. I mean, I understand it's important information. We as managers, we work really hard to work with our handlers and make sure that they have the information needed. And we're after our captains, we're after our fishermen. You know, you need to get this VTR in. They're missing it, or working with them if they're missing a certain species. So we're working really hard. And I think you just need to trust that we're doing our job to get them to you as quickly as possible. And I don't think that restricting the whole sector's trading is the right way to go around it.
Thanks. All right. Oh, Tom, I had a response.
Just real quickly, the requirements for pretty vague a little bit in Amendment 16 about requirements for making sure for review before ACE trades are approved. I just wondered if, by insisting on this requirement, has the regional office seen any improvement in the accuracy or submission time of BTRs?
Tom, I don't know that that's been specifically looked at. My inclination is to reply absolutely. And if you want me to substantiate that, I'm not going to. But I would like to expand on this topic just a tad and throw some caution out there. We're melding two distinct topics here. The policy of VTR compliance associated with ACE trading and VTR sendbacks. And although they are related from time to time, I would suggest more often than not, VTR non-compliance contributing to a blockage on ACE trading is more linked to blatant non-reporting than for sending a VTR back because the captain forgot to fill out the number of crew, something of that nature. So let's not associate omitting number of crew as the cause for blocking ACE trading.
Okay, thanks. All right, Dan, and then we're back to the audience.
Sorry. And you're right, Barry. There are two separate entities, but they are being treated as one. If a VTR is sent back, it's considered non-compliant because it hasn't been turned in. I think what we're looking for is we need understanding of there are certain data fields that we use for sector management. Understandably, everyone in the agency, there are people in the agency use all fields, but we are using only specific fields for what we're trying to accomplish for sector management. If a VTR is sent back for number of crew, gear size, what have you, you know, there are certain aspects that we don't care. We got the information that we have. I think there needs to be a little more flexibility of, okay, it was sent back, but you're treating a send back as a not submitted. You know, honestly, that's how it's been portrayed. If I'm wrong, I would gladly like to hear how it actually is, but that's what has been portrayed to the managers as a send back.
That's accurate.
All right, there's one with a mic back here. It's Eric.
I'm going to put Tony and Barry on the spot, but this is more so a question for the agency as a whole and for the council to consider. You know, let's fast forward 6 months, 12 months, 18 months. What are your top three priority solutions that the agency plans on implementing to fix the concerns that you've heard today? None of which should be a surprise. I don't think that you guys heard anything new today, per se. These are concerns that we continue to raise. You know, we do acknowledge that things are getting better, absolutely. But we still have a long way to go. So I'd be interested in hearing, you know, your top three big picture solutions to these problems.
I'll go first, Mayor. The first one, Eric, is what I've heard loud and clear is the guidance documents, instructions on how to interpret reports, how to utilize the data, what are all the data tables that we are pulling this information from. That is in process now of being developed to be sent out, so that's number one. Number two is improving the deal data, the level of deal data quality, working on that. I think what we're starting now is going in the right direction. And number three is the imputed trips, knocking those out, driving those down to zero. Those are It's not a big picture, but it's pieces of the big picture to improve the whole reconciliation process.
I would add to that, taking a look at the various data streams that we are collecting, there's many distinct data streams that are I'd be hard-pressed to call them integrated. You know, and primarily on the vessel side, there's a significant burden with independent reporting requirements. You know, everything from declarations to VTRs to catch reports, you know, PTNS, it goes on. I'd like to explore the feasibility of eliminating any redundancies or piggybacking some of those data streams to consolidate into other established data streams.
Thank you. Let's go to the front here.
Like it would have been a lot stronger. But do you think it would help if, for example, the dealers were sent a letter saying if you don't report to the sector managers within 2 weeks that your permit will be suspended to buy fish? You know, this lady that said she hasn't got a report from August, to me that's astounding and disgraceful. I mean, you can't do your job without those reports. That's the first question.
When we received that letter, thank you for it. The problem with it is that, and we've been to meetings and shown that NIMS already knows who these dealers are. They know who's late, and honestly, I have no authority over a dealer. I believe it's the agency that has the enforcement arm that has that task to get these dealers to report on time. We don't have that ability. We don't have that authority. The only authority a sector manager has, and it's a very tenuous one, is over our own members. You know, that's the only thing we can actually control.
As a person on the council, I guarantee I will be introducing a motion at some point here to substantially increase the burden on dealers. I, as a fisherman, I think this is ridiculous. I mean, the dealers should report. I think it's a two-day requirement now. We're talking about 4 months here. This is crazy. That's number one. The second one I had is on this imputed trips, because quite frankly, it's the first I've ever heard of it. Who is noticed of an imputed trip? Obviously, the fishermen are, because I've probably got some and don't know anything about it. And I would suggest to you that I would like, as a fisherman who may have an imputed trip and has been trying to figure out sometimes how my fish magically disappear, that I would like to be noticed when you have an imputed trip on my behalf. I think we could clear them up a lot faster if we knew we have.
Right now, the notification goes to the sector managers. We can look into sending out to the individual fishermen, but I'd like to work that with the sector managers and get their thoughts on that. Right now, it is a good conduit to go through the managers, going to one person rather than to many. But we can look into that with the managers and get their feelings on that.
Okay. Because as a fisherman, I'd like... I've been in the study fleet since it was started. I've probably got the most number of submissions of anybody in the study fleet. And I can tell you that at least the VMS vendor I use, that EVTR is not going to work under the current setup. The transmission rate failure is far too high. I'll tell you right now, I have SkyMate as a VMS vendor. Until those satellites are available far more time than they are, the low Earth satellites, they only pop up for a second here and there. The bigger the data stream you have to send through that satellite, the less likely it is that it's ever going to make it, because it's not available long enough for it to send the entire stream. And if it doesn't send it, then it vanishes into whatever it is you folks call the, you know, electronic ether or whatever. So I think, you know, while electronic VTR is a good concept, it's a great idea. If it could be sent from the dock through land-based computers, it may work. But if you're going to try and send it through the current VMS system as it's currently constructed, the failure rate is far too substantial to ever have this work. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
VMS is not a necessary component of EBTR today. You do not have to submit that report using your VMS unit. You need to complete the report while at sea. That is consistent with the regulations. Completing meaning simply key it into your computer. You are permitted to copy that to a thumb drive or pick up a Wi-Fi signal or anything you want once you hit the dock and email it. So VMS is not necessary for EBTR.
Okay, well, I'll just go a little further then. I mean, there's no Wi-Fi in a lot of places we land, and, you know, the more times we copy these things, sticking things inside of computers and whatnot, the worse it happens. So we're still a long ways from there. I'll say as a fisherman, this is not as a council member, that this data stream issue is not going to be solved until we have one data stream. And that data stream should emanate from the dealer. It should be the dealer reports to you and reports to the sector manager. That's it. As long as we've had all these streams of data wandering all over the planet, we're going to have all these mismatched setups. I just to this day do not understand why the onus on reporting is not entirely on the dealer. The fisherman comes in, enters a VTR number into the dealer's database, and the dealer reports the weights, and the sector manager gets them transmitted electronically. You get them transmitted electronically. They should be there an hour after the fish are weighed. It should be that simple. And until it is, you're going to spend hours and hours and hours, just like everybody's reporting, chasing all these phantoms. We've got far too many streams of data here. And, I've watched the dockside monitors. I've watched all of it. I'm going, this is just never. It's too complex. We've got to radically simplify this setup. And it should all emanate from the dealer, because that's the only weight that matters. Whatever the dealer has for a weight is the weight. That's it. Whatever's in the VTR is, quite frankly, to me, essentially useless. It's my guess at weights, and I'm a crummy guesser. The VTR should be radically simplified to just record the information you need from the fisherman to use to verify that a trip was made. Forget the discards, forget the listing of the fish, all of that. It should be, the permit number, the name of the boat, when I left, the mesh size I used, and a signature. And that should be it, because that's as near as I can tell all it's actually used from the VTR. And until we simplify this stuff, you talk about dyslexic. I'm the guy who, I was just told that my handwriting's like a doctor's. They can't tell the difference between S-H-A-K and R-H-A-K. And that's led to innumerable problems. And you're hearing it from all these people. So I really hope that we'll get together, form some kind of a panel of experts on this subject to work on radically simplifying data in general. Thank you.
Thanks. I wanted to go back. Karen, did you have something to add about the imputed trips issue? You looked like...
I was just going to add, as far as the imputed trips, at this point it's probably better to send them to the sector manager, just because some of the trips that are supposedly imputed are actually valid trips for which a VTR has already been sent in, and it's less burden for an individual fisherman if the sector manager at least can call out those trips so that there's a shorter list of imputed trips, which are usually end up being set trips or mechanical failures or something like that. That's the point I want to make.
Thanks. More audience questions? Is that? Oh, you've got the mic. Go.
So I wanted to speak to two things. On the imputed trips, I think it is helpful for the sector managers to be able to take a look at some of those things. I've had some members in my sector that have had imputed trips for which they weren't actually ground fishing. They were doing, cooperative research or something else like that. And I just, track down the VTRs and get that information to them and get that taken care of. So the other thing was that I have some members in my sector that are lobster fishing, that have ground fish permits, and they're holding up the process of, potentially ace trades, for example. If we don't have the VTRs in, then we can't necessarily trade ace. And I just wanted to suggest a simple fix. If there's a way that National Marine Fisheries Service could somehow allow fishermen who are not ground fishing and don't plan on ground fishing because they have a small amount of ace or because they have no ace whatsoever, to essentially put that permit in like a CPH or some other sort of category, I think that would be really helpful, because that way they wouldn't have to be held to the same requirement of having to report did not fish every week. Because, you know, if they're lobstering or if they're shrimp fishing in the winter, if they're doing something for which they don't actually have to submit a BTR, then it's an additional burden that they're not necessarily thinking about. And if a week passes, if a few weeks pass, you know, after a while, they've gotten into the routine of not reporting, they don't realize they're actually holding up our sector for, you know, we won't be able to trade ace, or even worse for them, come the end of the year, their permit will be, it won't be renewed because they're non-compliant for BTR, which I think is a problem for a lot of these fishermen who don't have much ace, but their permit is still important for our sector because, you know, every little pound of fish does count. Even if their permit's only got, you know, a small amount of fish on it, that's important for our sector, and even in some cases where it doesn't, and there's a number of permits in some of these outlying ports, whether it's, you know, Stonington, Winter Harbor, Jonesport, and some in Massachusetts as well, those permits provide an opportunity for someone else to go fishing. And already this year, we've got a new entrant fisherman. He's been fishing out of South Portland this year. He was able to get a permit that didn't have catch history on it and actually turn it into an opportunity to go fishing. He's been leasing some quota from the Maine State Permit Bank. He's got some quota from our permit bank as well. And so he's been able to make a viable business opportunity out of that. And I'd hate to take that opportunity away from other people by seeing permits that, a fisherman was holding on to it and he said, well, I don't want to have to every single week say, did not fish, did not fish, did not fish. I'm just going to forfeit this permit. And that's actually what happened with one of the members in my sector. So again, that, you know, that represents an opportunity for someone else to pass that permit on to another fisherman. Or like I said, if there is a small amount of quota, that quota is valuable to our sector. So I think we should do whatever we can to try and loosen that burden for people who are not actively fishing. And I think the way to do that, again, is to have some sort of category where you can keep the active federal permit, and in this case it's lobster, keep that active. And so whatever the reporting requirement is for lobster, they're going to have to be compliant with that. But for the fishery for which they're not active, and in the case of some of the fishermen in my sector, haven't been active for years, let's just sort of put that on a shelf, so to speak, and have another designation for it that eliminates the requirement for them to have to say did not fish every single week. So I don't know if this requires council action or if this requires simply a sort of, you know, a change in how the National Marine Fisheries Service does some of their work. But I'd love to have someone, you know, take a moment and discuss that with me, whether it's here, whether it's, you know, outside the scope of this meeting. I think it's something that should be addressed, and it probably affects other sectors as well. Thank you.
All right. Stephanie, did you have a response?
No. Just to Aaron, I'm thinking that they should be aware of it, but if you go on and you do the electronic did not fish reports, you could actually do it for up to 3 months in advance, so they could only do it 4 times a year if they wanted to hang on to those permits and just submit it. You just click all the weeks, you can just do it. I mean, it takes a few minutes, but they could only have to go in 4 times a year, and that way they wouldn't have to be doing it manually every week. So that could be a good suggestion to your guys.
Right, can that be a sideline conversation maybe later? Take another audience question. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. So I'm not sure if the council's aware of this or not, but there's a kind of a phantom field in the VMS SkyMates and Boat Tracks and Tron, and it's called the VMS Catch Report. Last year, I believe this catch report had 10% compliance, and it's understandable because no one really knows what it does. It kind of looks like a VTR and, you know, kind of quacks like a VTR, but it isn't considered a VTR. And so let me just give you a little synopsis about the requirement for this page. If you're fishing in one broad stock area, as most of my fishermen are, the only requirement for this page is that you put in the VTR number for the trip, and you leave all of the fields blank that have a description of all of the species that you might have caught on that trip. So I'm wondering, and I guess this is a question to NIMS or the council, is why can't this VMS catch report be used as an electronic VTR? It seems like it'd be very easy to adapt it for this purpose by just including a field where they would put in their gear type. They already know the area of fish because they're putting in the broadstock area in the declaration. But all they'd have to do is fill in an estimate of what they have on board for each trip and submit it, and then you'd get your compliance for this field. And I know that NIMS wants to make this more compliant this year, but I guess what I'd like is a little bit more explanation about why this can't be used as an electronic VTR. And if it can't be used, why not?
There you are, Josh. I'm not a VMS expert. I suspect there are real estate issues associated with that form, so that it wouldn't, so that it doesn't accommodate some of the data fields associated with the VTR, such as the effort some of the effort and other specific fields unique to a VTR. That's my best guess at the moment.
I think all it would require would be an electronic signature at the bottom of the page. And you could even put that disclaimer that is on the paper VTR about, under federal law, if you lie on this sheet, then we're going to take you to jail. You could include that so that it becomes an enforcement type tool, and you could increase your requirement and the compliance on this VMS catch report. But, my fishermen didn't fill it out because they had no idea why they were putting in their VTR number when they had already put their VTR number in multiple times in other sources in the VMS fields through the SkyMates and their other VMS programs. So it just seems to me like that's an unutilized program, within the whole VMS SkyMate universe that would make life a lot easier than having to even go through an eVTR or a paper VTR.
Yeah, and again, I can't speak to the some of the technical issues associated with VTR. I do think there are some transmission issues, as David alluded to. But I'm sure there's some technical reasons why we haven't explored that yet. But nothing's off the table as far as I know.
So we can do one more question or comment from the audience. We've got 1 minute left. Doug, did you have something?
If you care to, I can talk about some of those technical issues, but I defer if there's another question. Otherwise, I can talk to Josh offline.
Does anyone have a question they need to ask? All right, 60 seconds.
A little tough to do in 60 seconds, but the quick and dirty is that VMS catch report was supposed to fill in a data gap between the time that the trip ends and the time that the VTR and DO data become available to the agency. So that did have a utility at some point. I think that was surpassed through the development of some of the catch monitoring programs that we've evolved over time. So some of the utility of that VMS catch report may not exist anymore, but that's certainly something that the agency can consider and evaluate the effectiveness. It was also intended as a reporting mechanism for the VTR serial number for trips that just fished in one broadstock area. We considered a range of ways to report that, and this seemed, at least in some capacity, to be the most effective out of the ranges considered. We did consider it as a conduit for the eVTR at some point, However, because of the development of flounders, that seemed to be the more effective mechanism. That's not to say that it can't be reevaluated, but at the time that flounders was being developed and seemingly finalizing its completion, that seemed the more appropriate mechanism for EBTRs, and the VMS catch report was a mechanism to get real-time monitoring data that would fill in the existing data gaps. But it's something that I've noted, and as we can take back to the agency and consider and try to make things work or streamline as necessary.
Good job. All right, we're taking a break. We'll come back at 10:30 for the panel on effort controls.